The following interview was conducted with Kevin Hale on behalf of the Madison County Oral History Project that is part of Madison Historical, the online encyclopedia and digital archive from Madison County, Illinois. The interview took place in the house of Kevin Hale in Pontoon Beach, Illinois. The interviewer is Matthew Hale, a student at Southern Illinois University, Evansville. All right, so Kevin, how you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing great. So tell me a little bit about growing up in Alton, the Alton area.
Growing up in the Alton area, it was a much different time. I mean, those were days you could go outside and you could play and not have to be worried about anything. We'd get up, all day long. The only time we'd come home when it was time to eat or go to bed, take a bath and go to bed. As in regard to the town itself, manufacturing was a big part of the area. You had Olin Brass and Winchester together. One made brass, one made ammunition. Then you had Owens Glass Company in Alton. They made, just what I said, bottles and glass products. And then you had the steel mill in Alton. So manufacturing was a big part of growing up. It provided a lot of good wages. It provided a lot of income to the county in the form of tax revenue. It helped the communities by having people go to the restaurants, go to the stores. When we were growing up, it was a much different time, though. I recall times when my grandpa would just take people off the street and bring them in, give them something to eat. You don't see much of that these days.
So kind of going off of that, how late did you and your brothers and your friends stay out typically?
Depends what night of the week it was. If it was during the week and there was school, we'd probably go inside at 8 at the latest. If it was a weekend or during the summer, yeah, you're talking 10, 11 o'clock at night.
So you also grew up in this manufacturing-centered city. How big of a deal was that to the residents of the area, would you say?
I'd say it's a very big deal. Without Olin Brass there, Olin Brass and Winchester at the time, you wouldn't have the tax revenues being generated that would keep the roads fixed, would keep other people's property taxes down, because the more a company pays into it, hopefully you can lower the residential tax rate. So it did have a big impact. I mean, people, that was their livelihood. You take the manufacturing away, you lose a lot of people.
So there were other companies in the area, but was Olin Brass and Winchester sort of the biggest company that had a presence there? Or was it more of a joint, kind of everybody knew who everybody was and had equal kind of presence in the town?
Well, from my recollection, Olin Brass was the biggest. There were thousands, 2,000-3,000 people employed there. When I was older, I know there were at least 2,500, so I'm sure there were more growing up, but Owens Brass had, Owens, Illinois, had fewer people, and I think the steel mill had fewer also.
So to your memory, did Owens start out as a small company?
Yes, it was a very small company, and it grew into a huge, diversified company. It split from Olin Brass. Olin Brass and Winchester and Olin Corporation, they all split in 2007. So when we were under Olin Corp, we also got into things like chloralkalis and water stuff, and there were all different kinds of businesses we got into. Today it's mainly metals for Olin Brass. Olin Corp still does all the other stuff, and they actually have Winchester in their businesses.
So where's the actual Olin headquarters located at?
Our headquarters is in Louisville. We also have a big presence in Schaumburg, Illinois. We have corporate folks up there. We have corporate people in Louisville. So we're spread out.
So kind of speaking of growing up with Olin, did you know anyone personally growing up that worked there?
Well, my grandfather, he worked there. He worked there for 47 and a half years, and we grew up with him probably starting around third grade. We moved in with them for a short time, then moved out, and then moved back in. I basically grew up with him and Olin Brass. I remember many nights he'd get calls in the middle of the night and say, come on down and help us out here. We can't figure this out. And he'd yell and moan and groan, but he'd grab his stuff and he'd go. It's only like a 5-block walk from his house, and he walked many a night.
So did the rest of your family or friends that you knew, did they work close in town?
My brother worked there briefly. He didn't stay too long. A lot of people I went to high school with, they got out of high school and went directly into Olin. Others would try to go the college route.
So what was the perception of the county from people your age at the time when you were growing up? Was it, you know, the place to be, or was it just a nice place to live?
Well, my perspective from when I was growing up, I remember it being a very strong Democratic stronghold. Unions were really big there. Every business was unionized, and it was a good union then. They would actually take care of their people, unlike today when the unions may not help so much.
Did you ever witness, say, strikes or protests from unions?
We had a strike in the 70s, my grandpa did. He was part of it in the 70s, and I do recall those days. We didn't eat nearly as well as we used to when he wasn't on strike. But when I was there in 2000, there was a strike, and I was already part of the management team, so I had to go, and while the picketers were outside the gates picketing.
Was it a scary experience, or was it something that, you know, you just walked through and didn't really pay much mind to?
In my case, it wasn't bad at all. I mean, I knew the picketers and stuff. There's this one guy named Leonard. I won't use his last name, but Leonard and I were real good friends there, and he was part of the hourly union workforce, and I was a salary person, but I'd be going through the gate, and he'd yell at me, you know, this scab, you know, and all this other stuff, and then he'd come up to me and whisper in my ear, hey, Kenny, go get me a pack of cigarettes from Quick Trip and come on back. So I'd go get those, give them to him, then he'd start yelling at me again, you know. It wasn't bad. But there were others who were harassed. And it did get a little nasty. Not like the protests today, but it did get a little nasty.
Was it like physically nasty, or is verbally abusive?
Mostly verbally. A few altercations, but mostly verbal.
Did they have chants and all that stuff? Is it a stereotypical strike, or was it sort of like more unconventional?
It was more, they're going to walk the picket line if you come, if you cross the line, they're going to yell at you. It was very few occurrences of where they actually tried to stop you from going in or anything like that. It was more of a peaceful strike, as I recall.
Did they ever ask you to strike?
No. No, they knew I wouldn't.
So, did your coworkers kind of have a similar view to you? I know you said some of them were harassed, but was the general consensus kind of, these guys are my friends, and they're just yelling at me for show?
I obviously can't speak for everyone, but most of the folks I were with, the people I were with, they would agree it wasn't too bad. Now, one person, he actually felt scared, but I was never to that point. I never got there. I'd actually pick him up, and we'd go in together after that, so it wasn't too bad.
Okay, so jumping into your educational background, getting into high school, what was the high school experience like in Madison County?
High school back in those days was very, very different. I mean, you had the trade schools, you had electricity, you had drafting, machine shop, welding, all the good stuff, woodworking. the trays that were really good. I mean, I don't know why we ever got away from those, because they're good paying jobs and they're well needed. You need to have trade schools, and today they're kind of frowned upon in some places. But they thrived back in the day. And auto shop, I forgot about that. My brother wrecked his car like 2 hours after he got it, and they took it to auto shop and got it going. So it took a while, but it was smashed pretty good. But other than that, the high school experience was pretty typical. You had those who wanted to do the trades. You had others who wanted to do the science part of it. So it was very typical.
So growing up in high school for me, there wasn't many social, like, I guess, cliques, I should say. What was kind of the experience of that for you?
For me, I didn't have any cliques I was in or anything. I was very introverted. I didn't want to see people in high school. It's just I wanted to go home and do whatever I wanted to do. I had a couple friends, but they didn't go to my high school. They went to Alton High. We'd hang out together, and that was about the extent of my social life there in high school. Wasn't anything to write home about. Didn't go to the prom. Didn't care if I went to the prom. I just wanted to go, learn, graduate.
So was there a rivalry between, you went to East Alton.
East Alton.
And was there a rivalry between East Alton High and Alton High?
There was a very good rivalry, and also with us and Roxana Shells. We did not like the Shells, and they were always good rivalry games. It's not like the games that I went to in high school here recently, where high school football games. I've never seen it when you had such a police presence there. It's just, I couldn't believe it. Back then, it was a friendly rivalry. You know, it wasn't get in your face and yell or anything. It was that side of the field is going to scream when they see something they like. The other side is going to scream when they do. And that was about it. Everybody went home and got along, had a good old time.
So did you have a favorite teacher or a class that you took?
I had a few good teachers I liked. My chemistry teacher, I cannot remember his name, Mr. Hallemeyer, that's who it was. He was quite the prankster. I liked that. He'd get us all together, and we'd play tricks on the physics class, but we'd apply the principles of chemistry when we did it. Well, the physics class would apply the principles of physics when they retaliated with us. It was very harmless, but it was fun.
What kind of pranks did you guys pull?
There was a lot of stuff where I recall a lot of stink bombs going on, and there's my chemistry days are long gone, so I can't remember what it was, but we'd made this one thing where you throw it on the floor and step on it, it would pop real loud, almost like a round going off.
So how would you compare high school classes of today back to maybe when you went to high school? Because, you know, these days, prank wars aren't exactly smiled upon by today's school's administration.
Correct. And I'm not saying they were smiled upon by ours either. We just went ahead and did it. But today's schools are, from what I gather, I haven't been in high school since 1976, but the high schools today, I would not care to go. They seem very violent, the very disruptive student body. I just couldn't imagine myself doing that. I went to the middle school the other day and was waiting in the office to pick someone up. And there was this student that just came back from suspension for fighting. Well, the girls that they were fighting passed by the office, and they just came back from suspension also, and they more or less put their head to the glass of the door and said they were going to jump her later on today. So we didn't have all that back in our day. You know, it wasn't a love fest, but we didn't have a bunch of mouthing off and disrupting class and everybody fighting. We did have fights, but not to that extent.
Do you think that's just because of the location or because of society as a whole?
I think that's the way society has become. I mean, it's like today. You can't tell me what to do. I should be allowed to do whatever I want to do, and I disagree with that. We need to have more discipline in the schools, but as a teacher, you get in trouble from my perspective, you get in trouble if you discipline your students, and I don't understand that. On the other hand, teachers today seem to be more vocal about political processes in the classroom. I don't see any need for that. And just teach the course, have a good discourse, but don't bring in a bunch of your opinions and all that. Let's just stick to the facts. I mean, if you want to have a forum where that's what you do, if it's the kind of class where you discuss current events, that's great, but don't just start interjecting the news of today into your study plan unless it's necessary.
Okay, so getting into college, name all the colleges that you went to, because I know you went to a lot of them all around the country.
Oh, I did. Started out with SIUE back in the day when, you know, there wasn't much there. My favorite building was still the library, and it still is today. I love that library. And the bowling alley. That's about what I liked. But I enjoyed it. That's when I first started getting interested in talking to other people and stuff, and getting their opinions, start socializing. I really liked that. After that, it was Lewis and Clark for a little bit to start taking some of my other general studies. That was quite different than SIU. I liked SIU. I liked their format, but I liked the bigger school. And nothing against Lewis and Clark, but it didn't seem quite as good as SIU. After SIU, it was the University of Texas. Went there for a year and a half with the instructor staff in the Marine Corps. I loved University of Texas. You talk about some wild times there. I mean, the teachers were crazy, and we had a good old time. I really enjoyed that. That was probably the best year and a half there. I wasn't a stellar student there, but some of my best classes, some of the classes I enjoyed most were some of those that I did not do very well in. I really loved them. Loved the botany teacher. Didn't do well in botany at all, but the course was fun. Went from there to Northern Virginia Community College. Very, very intense. Would go four nights a week at one point. That got to be very, very demanding. But in there, also took a brief stint to go to George Washington University. Now, George Washington ended up being one of those universities that was just did not coincide with my values. It was a very liberal college at the time, and Iran was going on, and I was in the military. I was in the military, and some of the situations happened that really didn't need to, because the teacher just seemed to harp on the military and stuff. And yeah, I tried to keep my mouth shut, and I did. Only did one semester there because it just wasn't worth the effort. After that, Greenville College, Greenville, Illinois. Got a BS in organizational leadership in 2000. And I really enjoyed that. It was, you go one night a week at Lewis and Clark, but you'd always have the Greenville College professors doing the instruction. It was a good experience. You'd have the same cohort with you throughout the program. It was very intense. You'd have 5-week programs, and you're constantly writing papers. And then at the end of it, you have a capstone project, and it was very demanding, but I really enjoyed it. I miss my professor, Professor Beans. He was very good at what he did, and he kept us all under control, and in many cases it could have really gotten out of hand, because you have older adults. We obviously have a lot of opinions, and some of them came out real quick. But he kept it under control. And that's been my college experiences. It's been a lot of them. But I've seen a lot of different aspects of it. I've enjoyed it. If I could afford it, I'd just do nothing but go to college. But can't do that. Kids want to eat, so do I.
So, what's interesting here is that you bounced around from these big universities and also went to community college as well. What was the differences in sort of the vibe and the culture between the community colleges and these four-year universities?
The four-year universities seemed more, I don't know if it's focused, but this is what you need to do. Let's do this, let's go there. And the community college was, these are your general studies. Try to get some of those out of the way, and we'll see how you're going there. I think the instructors, nothing against the community colleges, but the instructors just weren't the same caliber as a regular four-year university professor, at least in my experience. I haven't been there in years. It might have changed now. Community colleges are very respectable, and they're very affordable. And today's college prices, that's what you have to do, and I understand that. Now, if they all transfer, good. If they don't, you've wasted your time.
Getting into your military background now, you joined the Marine Corps, correct?
That is correct. I joined the Marine Corps March 23rd, 1978. I got out October the 18th, 1987. I was a legal clerk, actually a court stenographer by trade, but I never took any courts. We'd seen a lot of cases. We'd have officer discipline cases where officers would get in trouble and they'd have to be taken to court-martial or punished, however. Very interesting. Very interesting. I spent, like I said, a year and a half in the inspector-instructor unit at University of Texas, then went to the 2nd Marine Division in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Now there you really, that's Marine Corps. It took me a while to get used to that. I'd done a two-year tour in Hawaii where you'd get up at the crack of 8 o'clock and go to work, and you get to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, they're getting up at 5 o'clock. I'm thinking, what is this? But it was very, very, I enjoyed it. I mean, the work was fun. There was a lot of it. A lot of people in trouble, but they did their best to keep everyone disciplined and get them going. It was a good time. Got a Navy Commendation Medal out of it, and I really enjoyed it. I don't regret one day of it.
So, being in the Marines, you had to go through basic training.
Correct.
What was that like? Because today you see videos of it, and it's scary, people in your face, and all this crawling around in the dirt and doing a whole bunch of this training. How was it back in when you joined?
Today's training is a lot different than when I went in many respects. In some ways, today's training is harder. Other respects, it's not. When I went in, it was in-your-face type thing. You'd get the drill instructor with this campaign cover, and he'd put it right in the middle of your nose there and just start yelling at you. And they could get away with it then. They can't today. You're supposed to not be able to yell or swear, and I just don't understand that part, because that was part of it. You want to take this group of men or women, you want to break them down, you want them to learn to work together, to solve the problems together. You want to put your life in their hands, they put their life in yours. You can't have 50 different opinions going on. There has to be one way to do it. You have to have designated people who are going to tell you what to do, wouldn't need to do it, and then everyone else has to execute. In order to do that, you just have to break yourself down mentally and physically. Once you realize that, It's easy. It took me, maybe 2 months to realize that. And then, okay. This is why we're doing it. We don't want a bunch of individuals just going out doing whatever they want to do in a combat situation. You're going to have someone say, you take that hill, here's how you do it, go. And it's much different than being out in the private sector. From training perspective, from what I've seen today, today's training just seems harder to me. Maybe it's because I'm 60 years old and it just looks like a lot of work, but I don't recall doing the kind of training that they did back in my day. I mean, we didn't have it easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it just seems the courses they have set up now just seem much more difficult. And well, I still got to wear the uniform, and that's what I liked. I'll always be a Marine. It's a brotherhood or sisterhood, and you can start yelling at other people, and the Marines can fight amongst themselves, but when you step in, the Marines will always tell you to get out of there, and we take care of our own.
So you entered the Marine Corps in peacetime.
Correct.
How would you think your experience would differ if you went in, say, during a conflict?
I would think, like after 9/11, you had a lot of people just join up. I would think after a conflict like that training would be very intensified. No kidding around. This is what we're going to do. Here is our objective. This is what happened to us. I don't know what they did, but I'm sure they would keep referencing 9/11. This is what happened. We lost 3,000 lives from somebody coming into our country. Now we have to go to theirs, and we have to even the score. I can't imagine that the training would be very, very soft. I imagine it would be very intensified.
So, did joining the Marines help you with your career today? Do you still use the things you've learned back when you were in the Marine Corps and your job today?
The leadership skills, I think, have helped. But like I said, with the Marine Corps, you usually have one person telling you what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and you go from there. Private sector is different. You have to look at everyone that you're in charge of. You have to know what makes them tick. You have to know whether they like to be told what to do or just be held by the hand and instructed what to do. You have very different types of leadership skills that you have to incorporate to get the job done. I mean, I have people that you have to tell them step by step what to do, and others you just say, this is what I want done. You let them go and they do it. Somewhere in the middle are the rest of them. So you have to know your people. Marine Corps helped me do that. But the authoritative style of the Marine Corps doesn't always apply in the manufacturing. Just ask human resources. They really don't appreciate you getting in everyone's face and yelling at them. But there are times when I didn't appreciate me having to beg them to do their job, but that's a different story, I guess.
So did you almost have to fight that instinct that you learned in the Marine Corps when you first started your job to not get in their face and yell? Or was that something that you just knew right off the bat that you had to treat everybody differently?
I fight that to this day. People come in, start yelling at me, I have a tendency to just start yelling back. That's the way it is. You're going to take me on, I'm coming back. I'm going to get you. You're going to bark at me, I'm barking back. And likewise, if I bark at them and they bark at me, hey, it's usually we're done after that. You know, we don't go fill out a lot of paperwork or anything like that. But we have our own way of dealing with our internal problems. We don't like to take them outside our department. We normally handle them there. But the Marine Corps has helped me to do that, and it has been a curse in that I can't get away from it all the time.
So how many veterans do you work with?
In my department?
Yes.
Five. I've had the Marine Corps, Navy, Army, and Marines. And Air Force. I forgot to He no longer works with me, but he was in the Air Force. So we've had them all.
Do you guys joke around with, make fun of each other for what branch you were in?
Well, Yeah, I just set the facts straight. You know, you weren't in the military because you weren't in the Marine Corps. Yes, we joke around that way. I have nothing but the utmost respect for all the branches of service, but yeah, we always throw each other jabs at each other. That's just the way it is. I mean, that's the way it is in the military. You're just going to do that. That's why I had to go in the military, in the Marine Corps. My brother went in the Air Force. Hey, I'm going to go the other end of the spectrum here. He'll be in the Air Force. I'll be in the Marine Corps. So, and that's how that happened.
So, what made you want to work for Olin Brass?
I wanted to eat. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I was without a job for 6 months, and then one day I got a call that says, you want to work at Olin Brass? I said, I'll be right there. That's been 30 years ago, and going strong since. It's provided a good standard of living for me. If I've missed any meals during that time, it's because I wanted to, not because I couldn't afford to eat. I believe it's helped provide a decent living to support my family. I mean, everyone would like to obviously have more, but we're really not hurting too much. We have our basic needs, and we still have our worries about how we're going to accomplish things, but it hasn't been bad at all. It's been a very good experience.
So since you have relatives that worked at Olin Brass, did that sway your decision?
I knew my grandpa worked there, and he wouldn't mind if I worked there. He passed away before I did get there, but when he would set me down and just start talking about Olin and all the people there and all the places. When I walked in there, I felt like I'd already worked there. I knew the people he was talking about. I knew the places he was talking about. It made it very easy. I don't know how he did it for 47 and a half years, but I've already done it for 30, so. He did it at a much more difficult time. They didn't have all the safety standards. You know, you didn't have all your protective equipment for your ears, your eyes, your hands. They did it in a very, very difficult manner. I mean, it was a physical job. Not so much today. We have a lot of equipment to help take care of stuff that would normally cause injuries.
Do you know what your grandpa's generation did at Olin that would make it so physical?
They didn't have all the equipment that we have today. I mean, we have specialty cranes, we have specialty forklifts, and things to lift all heavy stuff, where in my day even, you may have to lift 75, 100 pounds and put it on your shoulder and go a few feet. Don't have to do that now. You have jib cranes for it and all kinds of equipment to take care of those issues. It's good and bad. I mean, if you have equipment like that, now you have more soft tissue injuries because your body isn't in the shape it was. When I was doing one job there, it was very physically demanding. I was in the best shape of my life. I felt great. But now I'm obviously not so great shape. It's a lot different.
So, describe to me, never worked, doesn't have a clue about the operations whatsoever. Kind of describe to me as someone who doesn't know a thing about it, what you do day to day.
Well, to the best you can. Let me give you a bigger perspective here. We'll start with what we call the DC casting plant. DC stands for direct chill. They take metal, melt it down, put it in what we call bar form. It may be 20, 30 feet long and 7 to 9 inches thick, 26 to 30 inches wide. They just put it in the bar form, and we take it from there. Those bars are made from scrap. That scrap is either purchased or it's scrap that my guys will deliver from the brass mill on metal transfer trucks to the casting plant so they can remelt it. So that's part of my guy's job, is to take scrap down there to be remelted. Once they melt the scrap down and make bars out of it, they roll it down some more and they process it further, and then it comes up to the brass mill. The casting plant's on Route 3. It's about two and a half miles from the brass mill. So we have to have my other guys, metal transfer truck drivers, take those coils that just got processed at the casting plant and bring them up to the brass mill to be processed further. So I have a set of drivers taking it to the casting plant in scrap form, and I have a set bringing it up in coil form. Once that coil is processed, at every step, they create scrap. That scrap goes back to the scrap dock. My guys take that scrap back down. Once that whole coil is processed, my other guys come into play, and that's called the shipping people. The metal's processed. It's what we call finished goods. It's ready to go out the door. My shipping crew takes it, loads it on a trailer. We have a clerk that prints the paperwork. It's signed, it's out the door. Now we've actually generated the revenue. So the operation I'm involved in is that absolute full circle of it. We go from the raw material all the way to the finished product and out the door.
So how long does this process take from getting from that raw material to shipping it out the door?
It depends on what type of alloy it is. Some of them take what we call their 8-week alloys. It may take 2 months to produce, and others 4 weeks from start to finish. So it all depends on what alloy it is.
So how many different alloys do you work with?
I don't know the exact number, but everything we make is copper-based. So everything we make has copper in it, and it goes up from there. You'll go from what we call alloy 110, which is just almost pure copper, all the way up to 260, which is copper and zinc. And then we have the high-performance alloys, which are a hybrid of other materials that we put in there. And that's usually our high-dollar stuff that we make.
So what led you to this position in the company? Did you choose it, or were you just promoted up to it?
I was a foreman. And I talked to my boss when I was watching one of those metal transfer trucks go down the road. So if that job ever comes open, the foreman for that, I'd like that job. And I got it a few years later. But, you know, be careful what you ask for, because there have been many occasions I wish I didn't have that job. But I did. I've stuck in there, and it's a good job. If you get the right people to work for you, it's a pleasure.
Is there a lot of people managing skills for your job?
A lot. I mean, you have younger people, you have older people getting ready to retire, you have everything else in between. You have the people who don't mind working and the people who just want to get a paycheck, don't want to do anything else. Yeah, you have to learn how to motivate them, how to take care of them, how to get them to do their job.
So how far do you... your branch ship? You ship nationwide, worldwide?
Some ship worldwide. We have plants in China. We send stuff to Canada. We send stuff to Mexico. And we do get some of our material from Germany. So it is worldwide.
So describe some of the things that your product is used for.
What we call... Mint metal. It's a metal for the United States Mint. We make strips that the mint will press out. They will actually stamp out. And it's for quarters, half dollars, gold dollars, or golden dollars would be the correct terminology, dimes and nickels. We make all that material and send it to either the Philly Mint or the Denver Mint, and they stamp it out. I really, really like that. There's automobile parts that get stamped out. A lot of electronic stuff. We have stuff for all households, very big in construction material.
So would you say everywhere you look there's materials from Olin Brass in something?
A lot of places you look there. Now whether it all comes from Olin Brass, it obviously doesn't, or we'd have one heck of a business. I mean, it'd be huge if everything came from there, but I'm sure... we have a respectable market share.
So, kind of going back to the process of manufacturing and shipping the metal, How has that process changed over the years, or has it kind of stick to this tried and true method?
No, it's changed a lot. We used to not have a DC casting plant. We used to just make it all on one location. Well, the business grew so much that we had to find other property and build other buildings and expand. And that's how we got the metal transfer trucks involved. They have to actually go from one area to the other. What's great now, though, is back in the day, some of the coils were so heavy that you could only put one on the trailer. Because of the waste, we now have specialty trailers that can haul four or five coils at a time. So instead of one truck going with one coil and then coming back, we actually have one that can bring back four or five.
So how many trucks are operating under your jurisdiction?
We have two on scrap. Two that can go on scrap. We have two that can go on coils. Then we have our other specialty trucks that go to other various facilities. We have 5 trucks and 7 or 8 trailers. I'd have to get the exact count.
So are those trucks your companies, or are they somebody else's that have been loaned out to you?
3 of those are owned by us. The rest we lease.
What kind of companies lease those trucks to you?
Oh, any trucking company. Well, you have Ryder Trucking, you have Hogan Trucking. If we have needs, we go and try to find them.
So do you have connections with other metal companies like U.S. Steel, local here in Granite?
I do not. I know no one from the steel industry. Steel and copper, 2 very different forms of metal. And I don't know anyone at those places. I'm glad to see the steel industry's back in Alton and in Granite City. That's a good thing for everyone.
Would you say that the different types of metal, for the demand for different types of metal, have they changed over the years?
Yes. I mean, they have changed as the economy, not really the economy, but as we have newer technologies that come into place, we have different alloys for that. It has changed a lot. But some of the stuff has stayed tried and true, like the mint metal. That's from the 60s, and it's still the same stuff today. So,
Has your company experienced sort of a change in regulations, an increase at all?
Any change in regulation affects us, yes. We have, just like any other business, you can emit so much into the air, and you can only haul so much per your Department of Transportation regulations. So, yes, the EPA and the DOT are heavily regulating to us.
So, how much technology do you think has been implemented over the years, say computers or other kind of digital devices that maybe weren't able to be used 50 years ago?
I won't even go back 50 years. We used to do everything by pen and paper probably in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, we'd still do everything by hand. It was just incredible. When you sit back and think about it today, you guys had people with notepads just writing stuff down. They go to each what we call a mill ticket and they make all the changes and stuff. Now we have the computers and all the technology starting to catch up with us. We still have a long way to go. We could do newer and better technology, but compared today to what it was just a few years ago, it's amazing. It's a lot cheaper too. You know, the computers are relatively cheap now. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was so happy. We had a computer. We just got one at work. It had 64 megs of RAM in that thing. You look at stuff today, and oh my word, I mean, look at your phone. It's amazing, and to think that we were real happy with that, you know, look at us. but it has changed a lot, and we haven't kept up with it like we should have, but I think we're making the turn.
So when did the company first start using computers?
I don't know when they first started using them.
Or I should say, when did your department start relying on them?
We started relying more on them in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it's worked up a lot since then. You know, now if the computer system goes down, no one knows what to do, which is kind of funny because in 2000 we had to do come up with our plan in case the whole computer network went down because it's 2000. You know, you have to have a backup plan, which obviously nothing came of fruition of that, at least for us. But I don't know how we would operate without our computers. We can't today. We can, but it's not a pretty sight.
Is it odd working with, you know, people who are younger, more my age, who pretty much rely on computers just to live, or compared to working with people in your generation or older that are used to not using computers to function?
I would take the younger generation any day. The older ones, the computers just boggles their minds, some of them, and it's not a good thing. The younger ones know what to do, you know, and I've even gone to them, hey, how do I fix this? Well, here's all you have to do, you know. And, I prefer the young ones who know how to use those.
Would you say that the younger generation in general is more compliant, or are they more do their own thing when it comes to working?
There's the rub. I mean, I'll take the younger generation for the computer aspect of it, but I'll take the older one for work ethics. It seems like the younger ones, it's all about them, and the older ones are old school like I am. Say, hey, you're going to pay me? I'm going to work for that pay. Some of the younger ones, not all of them, just want to be there, and they expect you to just pay them to show up. But they have good computer skills. No, it needs to be somewhere in the middle. I really like the old school work ethics. And that gets us out of there on time, and we all go home, and everybody's happy.
So how many jobs do you think, roughly, have been taken out because of computers in your department?
In my department, none that I can recall. Everything we do is labor intensive. I mean, you'll need a forklift. You're going to need a tractor trailer. You're going to need a crane to load and unload you. I don't see where a computer would have taken anything out. We need a billing clerk to actually run the paperwork. No, it hasn't affected us in my department.
So does your department largely rely on the human aspect of work, or more rely on the digital aspect, or is it a good blend of both?
It's a blend of both. A lot of it is the human aspect, but our guys can't take the metal until a computer actually says, okay, this is what you have on it. We've printed this paperwork. You always have to have paperwork with you when you go down the road for DOT purposes. You have to show them what's on your trailer and what your load is. We can't bring the metal up without a manifest. We can't take it down without a manifest. So it's mostly human, but we still need the computer to get it done. That aspect of the job, though, it's easier to write a bill of lading, a manifest, if you will, by hand than it is any other job.
So where do you see the future of Olin in the county?
I hope it's here for a long time, and it's had a good impact on the county, provided a lot of jobs, a lot of revenue. I hope it's here for a long time. I hope it's managed correctly, and everyone gets to benefit here for many years.
Now, does outsourcing jobs heavily affect Olin?
Not that I can see. I mean, I obviously don't see all the jobs that go on, but I don't see a lot of outsourcing.
Now, does the movement toward buying American products from a consumer standpoint, did that positively affect your business compared to buying metal from China or other overseas competition?
I don't know how much of our business has been lost to overseas companies. And we've stayed pretty steady for a while. The American-made is... I mean, we are proud to put our American-made labels on each product that we send out. And you realize that it's going to cost more, but you've also helped other Americans maintain their lifestyle. So I really don't have any idea how much outside companies contribute to this economy.
So, do you think there's a stable future for the metal industry here in America?
I would hope so, but you never know. Always the trade wars and all that stuff. They're good and bad. And I understand that. You want to keep stuff here in America. You want Americans to benefit from it. But you may reach a point where you don't. You know, the other companies just say, I'm going to buy it. Go overseas and buy it and bring it back in. So even though they'll pay a higher tariff, it's hard to say.
So one last thing I want to touch on is your time at the U.S. Bank in St. Louis. When did you start there?
I don't have an exact time I've started there. I worked there for 7.5 years. A lot of that was to save money to spend for college tuition. I should have stayed longer, apparently, but it was a good ride. I made a lot of friends there. I really enjoyed it. The work, I was on my feet for 8 hours, high-speed environment, and when you're an old man, it's hard to do. The young kids could do it, but I was already in my 50s when I started, so... It was difficult. I miss the people. I don't miss some of the ways they operated it. But I was only part-time anyway, so I just grinned and buried it. I really did enjoy it, though.
So what was your favorite aspect of the job?
U.S. Bank?
Yes.
Actually being able to see how your work is helping the economy. If you're processing 50 or 60,000 checks a shift just yourself, that's money that's going in and out of the economy. You're actually helping other businesses get paid and keep everything going, and I really enjoyed that.
So how much of that impact do you think reciprocated back to Madison County?
From U.S. Bank? That would be difficult to say. I don't know what other companies worked with U.S. Bank or anything like that. I only had a very limited scope of customers, 3 or 4, and that was it. And they obviously have a lot more than that.
So what was the culture like of working in downtown St. Louis compared to working in East Alton?
Downtown St. Louis was always an experience. Always, always, always. There were days I'd be pulling up and you'd see cars coming out of the parking garage the wrong way. Someone was stealing the vehicle, and the tires would get blown out when they hit the spikes, going the wrong way. Well, they're just going down the road, sparks are flying. There was an occasion where President Obama was coming to town, and someone had fired a round through the window. So the Secret Service was there. They were there ahead of his tour. Secret Service came down and did all that. I got jumped one night. I did two stints at U.S. Bank. On my first one, I got jumped and by 6 teenage boys, and that wasn't a very good experience. I was always happy when I was on the bridge on the way home. East Alton, totally different. You know, you just stroll into town, hardly anything going on, and it was very, very good. But I do recall one day back at the bank, I may go back there, we were having a fire drill, and we were outside the bank, and there was police tape out there, and everybody is asking what happened there. So that's where somebody got murdered last night. So it was a very interesting time. They had the police come in and give us a little, not a lecture, but they would inform us of all the crime in the area. And it was mind-boggling because you never really realized there was that much. But it was a fun place. They all took care of you, and we'd all walk out together and stuff like that. So that was always good.
So going back to your first stint, how much long did it take for you to adjust from working in East Alton to working in St. Louis?
On my first stint, it took a lot to adjust. It was really something I was not good at. It had to use we'd put the Micker numbers on the bottom of the check, and it had to be real fast. All night long, you're just 10 key and everything. I just couldn't keep up with that, and it showed. I didn't stay there real long. I knew I couldn't do that. I couldn't keep up with it, and everyone else, it's just amazing how some of those people would just fly 8 hours steady, just bang, bang, bang. I don't know how they did it. I couldn't. I realized that and had to give that up.
Now, did your coworkers, for reference, you work next to the dome, or close to the dome. For reference, did your coworkers say, hey, don't go to this area, it's dangerous?
Well, the police did at the night I got jumped. They said, you really shouldn't be in that area anyway. I said, well, where were you, like at midnight when I was leaving, that you couldn't tell me that then, It was a strange deal, because I went to the garage worker, and said, could you call the police? I've been attacked. He wouldn't call the police. Went into the hotel down there in St. Louis and said, will you call the police? I've been attacked. No, we will not call the police. We'll give you the phone. You can call the police. So I called them, and then the police come down, took my statement, and they said, you really shouldn't be in that area that late at night. I said, okay, I realize that now. But they were kind enough to escort me to my vehicle so I could get on the bridge and go home.
Well, that's all the questions I have. Is there any last statements you would like to make?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time. This is a very interesting interview. I learned a lot. This is the conclusion of the interview.